Hello, this is Joanne from the Talking Information Center with Storytime. You've been listening to a Nancy Drew mystery entitled The Haunting on Heliotrope Lane by Charlotte Keene. In the first segment, we find that Nancy and her friends attended a very scary movie and were leaving when they were approached by a girl named Willa and her brother. Nancy was known to Willa by reputation as a female detective, and Willa needed Nancy's help. Willa and her brother tell Nancy and her friends about Mrs. Furstenberg, the owner of the house on Heliotrope Lane, and her son Henry, who lived with her. Mrs. Furstenberg was found dead by a neighbor who had heard a scream and went into the house to investigate. The son, Henry, disappeared the same day. The neighborhood kids began to think the house was haunted. Willa went with her friend Izzy to see the house, and Izzy wanted to go downstairs where it all happened. Izzy was acting very strange after the visit and couldn't seem to remember details of the visit. Izzy threatened her friend Willa and said she'd hurt her if Willa continued reminding Izzy about the visit. Willa wants Nancy to help find out what is going on with Izzy's strange behavior. So, let's listen in. Chapter 3, The Sound of Evil. Ding dong, ding dong, ding dong. I was startled from my OJ and oatmeal the next morning by someone leaning on our ancient doorbell. Hannah, our housekeeper, glanced toward the front door, then turned to me with a wry smile. "It's for you," she said, sweeping away my empty oatmeal bowl. "Would you like to let her in?" Her? There were only three people in my life who would come to my house uninvited and lean on the doorbell at 8 a.m., and Hannah had just narrowed it down to two. Would it be the blonde, bouncy one, or the dark-haired, sarcastic one? As I approached the door, I could see the answer through the narrow lead glass window, but she wasn't looking terribly sarcastic today. Instead, George looked way jazzed. I opened the door a bit warily. She brushed right past me. "Sorry to come so early," she said. "It's just I cannot stop thinking about Willa's story last night. Do you think the house is really haunted? What do you think happened to that girl? I mean, what other explanation can there be? Right? Right?" I closed the front door, shaking my head. "Did you have coffee?" George's eyes widened. "Better," she said. "I had an espresso from that place on 3rd Street where they roast their own beans." I told him I needed some energy, and he said he made it super strong. "Anyway, I think I have the perfect Halloween costume for this year. Tell me if you think it's a good one. Mrs. Furstenberg." She looked at me expectantly, and when I shook my head slightly, her face fell. "Too soon?" she asked. "Way too soon," I said, walking past her to lead the way upstairs to my room. Considering she died under mysterious circumstances, and also she might still be out there haunting kids, I'd been searching Mrs. Furstenberg's case late into the night, and I felt, I don't know, almost protective of her. George followed me up the stairs. "So you do think the house is haunted?" she said excitedly. Nancy Drew, little Miss Realist, I can't believe it. Willa's story really convinced you, huh? Now you're a believer. We'd reached my room, and I sat down on my bed and pulled out my laptop. "I'm not sure what I believe, to be honest with you," I admitted. "I was so tired when we got home last night, but I stayed up late doing internet research. I just couldn't help myself." George sat down across from me in the big papa-son chair next to the window. "I get it," she said. "I'm fascinated, too, obviously. Anyway, what did you find out?" I rubbed my eyes and opened up the laptop, scrolling through the different websites I'd left up. It looks like most of what Willa told us was true. Mrs. Furstenberg died of a heart attack, and her son Henry is still missing. And the house, since Mrs. Furstenberg left no will and her only heir is missing, was tied up in legal red tape for over a year and left abandoned. The estate was recently given to a distant cousin. The house is for sale, but it's in such bad shape that no one is buying. Huh? George said. Someone does own it, then, technically? Right, I said. But she doesn't live anywhere near River Heights and doesn't seem super interested in the house itself. That's probably why kids are tromping through it left and right, freaking themselves out. George nodded, looking thoughtful. I gazed out the window at the neat houses on our street. It's strange that Henry took off like that, I said after a few seconds, especially if she really died of a heart attack. Why wouldn't he want the house? George followed my gaze. The only thing I can think of, she said, is that something happened in that house that he doesn't want to think about. She suddenly sat up and shivered, like she caught a chill. Sorry, this is all very creepy. Yeah, I agreed, glancing back at my computer screen and shutting the laptop. I don't fully believe in ghosts, but it sounds like she had a pretty unhappy life. She and Henry didn't get along, and nobody knew that much about her, which must mean she was lonely. She was found in that little sub-room in the basement with the door closed. If someone was there when she died, it's almost like they were hiding her body. George raised her eyebrows. Nancy, she said, are you going soft? If you don't believe in ghosts, then Mrs. Furstenberg can't be one, period. I sighed. I know, I said. Even though I don't believe in ghosts, I thought it would be helpful to consider what her motivation might be. If she really were trying to haunt the house. Because maybe whoever really is behind this could be using that. I paused, and thinking about that makes me feel this weird connection to her. Put it this way, if anyone has a good reason to haunt, Mrs. Furstenberg does. We were quiet for a moment, and then George said to catch my eye. So what's next? She asked. If I know you, Nancy, you've already got a plan worked out. Sort of, I said, remembering the rough plan I'd worked out last night. I think the first thing we need to do is talk to Izzy. The supposedly possessed one? George nodded slowly. But the way she's been acting, she said, at least according to Willa, she might not even be open to talking to strangers. I agree, I said, putting the laptop back on my desk and standing up. That's why we'll have to be a little sneaky. A few hours later, George and I stood waiting outside Izzy and Willa's dance class with a clipboard. What do we say again? George hissed as the front door opened. And Willa strode out, followed by a shorter girl with dark curly hair, who I could only assume was Izzy. Just follow my lead, I hissed back, then raised my voice. Excuse me, ladies, are you interested in getting free movie tickets for just a few minutes of your time? Willa looked up and smiled, pulling excitedly at Izzy's arm. I'd emailed her earlier to let her know George and I would be here to try to get some information from Izzy and to explain how she could play along. So far, she was doing a great job. Izzy looked more hesitant, but allowed Willa to pull her over in our direction. How much of our time? Izzy asked a little snootily, glancing behind her. My mom is coming to pick us up soon, and I can't make her late. Barely any time at all, George said, smiling wildly. A minute tops, I assured them. We're Tara and Gemma. We work for Spotlight Marketing. We're putting together a trailer for a new horror movie aimed at teenagers, and we wanted to get your input about what scares you. Willa raised her eyebrows. "Sounds cool," she said, then bumped Izzy with her shoulder. "Come on, Iz. It can't hurt to talk to them. Free movie tickets." Izzy looked less sure, but she nodded. "All right, so long as it's fast." "Okay," I said, picking up my pen and holding it over my clipboard. "Can I ask which of the following scares you? Zombies, vampires, werewolves, or ghosts?" "Seriously?" Izzy asked, looking doubtful. "Zombies," Willa said confidently, "and ghosts, definitely. What about you, Izzy?" Izzy looked at her friend. "Ghosts, I guess," she said. "The rest of them, meh." "Zombies don't scare you?" George pressed. "They eat your brains." "Do you watch that zombie show?" Izzy chuckled. "No, my parents would never let me. But I do really like scary movies." "Okay," I said, scribbling some pretend notes. "Have you ever had a personal experience with a zombie or a ghost?" I turned to Willa. She laughed nervously. "Seriously? No, I guess not. Not that I can prove. Although there was this..." She looked at Izzy and let out another nervous giggle. Izzy suddenly turned serious, though. Her eyebrows slanted down over sharp eyes. "What?" she asked. Willa nudged her friend with her shoulder again. "You know," she said, then leaned into Izzy's ear, dropping her voice to a whisper. I couldn't make out what she was saying anymore. Izzy's eyes widened. "That has nothing to do with this," she said sharply, then pulled away. Maybe it's sort of tangentially related," George said in a hopeful tone. I could tell she was trying to lighten the mood. "We're not going to fact-check you or anything. I mean, this isn't school. It's scary movies," she laughed. "Right," I put in smoothly. It couldn't hurt to just share whatever your friend brought up, could it? Izzy glared at me. "Why?" she challenged. There was something hard in her eyes that hadn't been there before. "So you can put it in your movie?" "The movie's already made," I said calmly, trying to ignore the weird feeling of her hostility was giving me and channel my most professional marketing associate. "We're just thinking about the trailer. We're not going to publicize what happened to you. Honest, this is just a casual chat." Willa looked nervously at Izzy, who was still staring at me in a not very friendly way, and then back at me. "There's this house," she said hesitantly, "on Heliotrope Lane." I smiled encouragingly and touched my pen to paper, but before Willa could say anything more, Izzy broke in. At least she looked like Izzy. "Shut up and don't you dare tell them anything about it," she said. But her voice was suddenly hoarse and five times deeper than it had been before. She reached out and grabbed Willa's arm, squeezing so hard that her knuckles turned white. Willa let out a startled cry and Izzy let go at once, her eyes scanning the parking lot. "There's my mom," she said, her voice abruptly returning to normal. "We'd better go. She has a sales call this afternoon." Before we could stop her, Izzy started walking away toward a beige SUV where a curly-haired woman waved from the driver's window. We turned to Willa, stunned. "Are you okay?" George asked. Willa was gingerly holding the arm Izzy had grabbed. It had an angry red mark where Izzy's fingers had encircled her wrist. "I'm okay," she said after a few seconds, just startled. "You guys heard that, right?" She looked from George to me, her hazel eyes serious. "We saw it," I confirmed, then lowered my voice. "Willa, are you okay to go home with them? We could give you a ride home." Willa looked at me blankly for a minute, then shook her head. "No, thank you. No, I don't want her to think anything's up and nothing will happen with her mom there." She paused, looking me in the eye. "But you'll do something? Did you get enough information? You'll try to figure this out?" Excuse me. I nodded. The woman in the SUV was waving to Willa now, and Willa waved back and held up her finger to indicate just 1 minute. You have my word, Willa, I said, still feeling a little shaky from the surprise. I'm going to look into what happened at the house on Heliotrope Lane, and we'll figure out what's going on with your friend. So what next? George asked me as we climbed back into my car. How are we going to figure this out? I didn't answer for a moment while I concentrated on backing out of the parking space and turning the car onto the road. Well, I said finally, I don't think we exactly endeared ourselves to the victim. You can say that again, George scoffed, glancing out at the row of stores we were passing. I don't think we're going to get much more out of her. In fact, if she sees us approaching again, I'm not sure what she'd do. George's features slackened as she stared out at the passing town, seemingly deep in thought. You heard a voice change? She asked, and there was an edge of fear in her voice. I did, I said, much as I'd like to forget it. She shook her head. It didn't sound like her at all. It sounded like, I shouldn't say this, I told myself. I should try to reserve judgment, keep an open mind, stick to the facts. But I couldn't stop myself. Evil, I said softly. It sounded like a deep, dark hole, like the absence of any feelings. If evil has a sound, that was it. George looked at me, clearly surprised by my answer, but she nodded. So what do we do? She asked after a few seconds. I sighed. Well, like you said, we're not going to get much more out of Izzy, I began. So we're going to have to check out the alleged perpetrator. George raised her eyebrows. And that is? The house on Heliotrope Lane, I said, and any ghostly inhabitants. Chapter 4, Haunted House. So this is where you tell me that ghosts don't exist, I said, peering out my windshield at what was arguably the creepiest house I'd ever seen. Maybe not the creepiest. Maybe that wasn't fair. Maybe it just seemed super creepy because I was here alone in the dark at the end of Heliotrope Lane, a dead-end street waiting for Bess and George to show up so we could search a haunted house for a ghost. I am pretty sure they don't exist, Ned's voice piped up from my phone. He sounded sleepy, probably because it was finals week. He told me earlier that he'd stayed up till 3 a.m. the night before and hadn't woken up until after lunchtime. But like scientific proof, I said, leaning closer to the windshield as I was sure a light flickered inside the supposedly haunted house. People's souls have no substance, so they can't take action against living people. Something like that? Ned was silent. Ned, I yelled, did you fall asleep? Sorry, I'm sorry, he apologized. Ghosts don't exist because it's scientifically impossible, I prompted. Ned, have you eaten anything? He yawned. I had some Red Hots. Real food, I urged. Maybe you should order a pizza. I think it would help your energy level. You're probably just experiencing the spiked adrenaline that people get when they're afraid, Nancy, he said. That doesn't mean ghosts exist. It means you're psyching yourself out. Right, I agreed, liking this line of thinking. Like I'm seeing things because I've already convinced myself that they're there, like, boo, as a figure suddenly jumped in front of my car. I jumped straight up in the air, knocking my head on the ceiling and dropping my phone into the space under the driver's seat. Outside the car, I heard giggling. Nancy? Ned's voice, barely discernible, called from the floor beneath my seat. Nancy? You all right? I rubbed my head, glaring out the windshield at my sort of sheepish-looking friend, Bess, who was trying to stifle her giggles. I'm so sorry, said George, appearing behind her, shaking her head. I told her not to. I reached a hand under my seat, digging around till I found the phone and pulled it out. Gotta go, Ned, I said. My fearless associates are here. I heard a buzzing sound on Ned's side of the call, followed by muffled voices. Oh, good, he said, because my pizza is here. You did order a pizza, I said happily. You know what they say about Ned Nickerson, he said. He's always three steps ahead of his girlfriend, Nancy Drew. No one says that. Talk to you later. Don't get possessed. I hung up the phone and very slowly, carefully picked up my purse, not making eye contact with my friends. By the time I got out of the car, they seemed convinced I hated them, which was not that far from the truth. Really sorry, Bess said, reaching out to touch my shoulder. It was cruel of me to startle you like that. Is your head okay? Just fine. I'm going to remember this, I said, trying to straighten up into a queenly posture, and pay you back when you least expect it. Now, are we ready to check out this house? Definitely, said George, nodding like a soldier. Not at all, said Bess, nervously twirling a lock of hair around her index finger. Can I wait in the car? I could be the lookout. I'm a very good lookout. You always say that. After you just scared the bejesus out of me? Absolutely not. I started walking toward the house, trying to look and feel determined. And I only tell you that to make you feel better when you don't want to come in. I knew that was a little mean, but my head still hurt. Also, it was true. My friends followed a few steps behind. Soon, we were standing right in front of the supposedly haunted house. Mrs. Furstenberg's house was a small ranch-style home tucked alone at the end of Heliotrope Lane, which was really more of a cul-de-sac. It had probably been a cute little house while Mrs. Furstenberg had been alive. The shingles were painted a cheery light blue, and there was a low, welcoming porch, perfect for a couple of rocking chairs. Now, though, the porch was covered with empty cans, plastic bags, and other trash. Animal feces were scattered in a corner. Mold grew near the edges of the windows, and someone had even spray-painted something indistinguishable to the left of the door. I couldn't help wondering what Mrs. Furstenberg would think if she knew what had become of her house. I jiggled the front door, but a heavy padlock held it closed. I could swear I heard sounds inside, and I stood still for a second, listening. What? George asked behind me. Do you hear that? I asked. It was creaking. Breathing? Hear what? Asked Bess. I shook my head. Stop psyching yourself out. Never mind. Let's look for another way in. Maybe there's something in the back, George suggested. Bess and I nodded in agreement, and we all headed for the side of the house. It looked like the yard hadn't been tended, in ages. The grass and bushes were totally overgrown. Still, we picked our way around the house. Soon after we turned the corner toward the back, George spotted it. Is that the broken window? She pointed, and we all followed her gaze to a window about 4 feet from the ground. Most of the glass was missing. An angry-looking holly bush had been planted right in front of it, but clearly many kids before us had forged a path because there was a spot where the bush had been pushed to the side. In fact, a big rock had been propped in front of the window on the ground. A step, Bess said, pointing. Yeah, those kids have really got this figured out, I said. I'm not into trespassing, but this makes our job a lot easier. George nodded. You guys ready? She asked. I looked the house up and down. Here in the back, there was more graffiti. Julie was here, spray painted at about eye level to the right of the window, and the anarchy symbol right next to the back door. And the shingles looked grimy even in the dim, beam of the flashlight I took out of my purse. Looking up, I could see the roof already starting to sag, and there was a smell, garbage, probably. The house did something to me, made my heart beat a little faster, made it harder to breathe, but I tried to remember what Ned said, what I had sort of forced him to say about adrenaline, about psyching myself up. I'm ready, I agreed, hoping to sound determined. I'm as ready as I'm going to get, Bess added. I aimed the flashlight beam through the window, but it caught dust and little else. It was too dark inside. I couldn't make out much. I handed the flashlight to George. Here goes nothing, I said, stepping onto the rock and grabbing the window frame. I struggled for a second to pull myself up and through, but soon I was able to get my knee up and then wiggle through enough to get my legs inside. I dropped onto a dusty hardwood floor and immediately sneezed. Good thinking, Nance, George teased, already stepping up to the window behind me. Sneeze and let the ghosts know right off that we're here. If they want to possess us, bring it on. Not funny, Bess whined behind her. I shook my head and shined the flashlight around. It looked like I was in a small living room, or what had been a small living room. What little furniture that remained was pretty well trashed. There was still a blue-flowered couch, but it was stained and smelly with rips in the upholstery, where fluffy stuffing poked out. Some splintered wood was piled in a corner, what had once been a coffee table, I figured, and across from the couch was a low fireplace, empty and dark. A mantel above it held empty bottles, cans, and chip bags. A large mirror hung over the mantel. Cracks spread outward from a huge punched-in hole in the middle. I could see my own silhouetted figure behind the flashlight beam in the mirror, and it made me shudder. I was broken into a million pieces. "Did you find the ghost yet?" George asked eagerly as she climbed through the window and dropped to the floor. Bess climbed through right behind her, though she looked less happy about it. No ghost, I confirmed, feeling a teeny bit of relief to have my friends in here with me. Vandalism, check. Littering, check. George nodded, looking around the living room. Seems like the only forces messing with this house right now are human. Let's hope so, Bess dropped to the floor after George, frowning as she took in the room. It smells. I'm guessing the trespassers aren't being good little scouts and leaving only footprints behind, I said. What? Bess looked confused. I think Nancy means it stinks because kids are pigs, George said, shining her own flashlight down a hall that extended from the living room to the right. They leave their trash. That was sort of what I was getting at, I said. Also, there's probably not a working bathroom in here, George added. Bess glared at her. Ew, gross, cuz. Sometimes life is gross, George stepped toward the hallway. It looks a little neater down here. Maybe this leads to the bedrooms. She started walking. All right, I think we'll stop there for today, and let's catch them next time.